outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Skin Tight Speedo Wearer.
Mr. Skin Tight Speedo Wearer.
Yes, we're sure that swimsuit style is all the rage on the beaches of Bulgaria. But here in North America, we prefer to keep our private parts private.
We can tell what your religion is.
Thank you, Mr. Skin Tight Speedo Wearer, for when you come out of the surf, you alert the rest of us beachgoers as to just how frigid the water is.
Your Audi is now an innie.
Why would you want to accentuate shrinkage?
Someone hand that man a towel, yeah.
Your tacky trunks go by many names. Banana hammock, grape smuggler, torpedo tube, and man sock. But they all equally display the inadequacies of Mr. Skin Tight Speedo Wearer, a real American hero.
Mr. Skin Tight Speedo Wearer.
Close your eyes, kids. Here he comes again.
Get ready for the best morning show on any kind of radio. Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio, get ready for Sam and Kara in the morning. Give Sam and Kara a call at 323-203-0815. And now, here are your hosts, Sam and Kara.
Woohoo, it's Friday. It's June 11th. Woo-hoo. Welcome to the show. We're live once again, getting ready for the weekend.
Oh, it's going to be a good weekend.
Yeah, I could use some sleep. I'm going to sleep all weekend, probably. Well, we're still trying to figure out where to go. So,
oh, yeah, we've got to decide.
No, Saturday. We're supposed to figure it out by tonight, so, you know, hopefully we will.
When you go out, when you go on a trip, what is it that you look for that you're like, oh, man, I'd love to do that?
Well, it's got to be a nice hotel, you know.
Like 3, 4, 5 star?
As many as possible. As many as I can afford.
25 freaking stars. What is it that you, though, what is it you look for in a hotel that when you go that you're like, okay, it's got to have this, it's got to have that?
Yeah, it's got to have a balcony, first of all.
Okay,
yeah, so you can look outside and enjoy yourself and have a cigarette or two. And
or a pack, whatever.
Yeah, there you go. And, you know, just you want it to be in a nice area. Otherwise, I'm not that picky, you know?
Mm.
Yeah, it depends what city you go to also. You know, some cities you want to be right downtown, and some of them you definitely don't want to be downtown. So it depends, you know.
Yeah. And then so you want a balcony so you can get a couple smokes in, see the view.
Yeah. It's got to be, you know, a nice room, decent room, not gross.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Do you do the room service thing?
Rarely.
No.
Rarely. Yeah. I'd rather go downstairs and eat something.
Yeah.
You know, go than out eat about. In the room. Yeah. But sometimes it's just late. You're too tired. You're too lazy. Then, yeah, you can order some.
Dina, have any ideas for you guys to go?
No. No, we have no idea. Because, you know, all the close places we've been to a million times. How many times can you go to the same place?
Like what?
Vegas, San Diego, Palm Springs.
I just think this is a good problem to have. I'd tear it up in a heartbeat.
Really? What do you recommend? Where do you think we should go?
Well, I mean, places that I haven't been to. I mean, Mammoth I've never been to. Wherever
but
that
Mammoth is more for skiing, I think.
Do they have like a summery thing with like a lake?
Not that I've heard of.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I've never been up.
Big Bear does. They have a lake there.
Okay. Well, wherever Big Bear is.
Yeah.
Where's that?
That's not too far. Maybe a couple hours from here.
Yeah.
Yeah. But how many times can you go there, too?
Have you been there a lot, too?
Yeah, a couple times, you know, during the winter when it's snowing.
Okay.
And it was pretty cool, yeah.
You guys just need to book a flight and go somewhere else. Go up north.
Yeah,
go
we're not going to fly, though. I mean, there's not enough time. You go for 2 days, you know?
Yeah, go up to San Francisco or something.
Yeah, been there a million times, too.
Lake Tahoe?
Lake Tahoe is a good idea, but it's far.
It's by far. San Francisco, right?
Not really, no.
Where is
it? No, Lake Tahoe is like on the border of Nevada and California.
Yeah, but California's so freaking narrow. It's like right next to each other.
Not quite. Not quite. It would be quite a drive, probably 4 hours or something at least.
Oh, from San Francisco?
Yeah.
Well, what about a plane flight?
Like I told you again, I'm not gonna fly for a 2-day trip, you know.
Well, I guess what I'm thinking is
plus I'm flying, you know, to Israel and stuff. Who's
got
the money?
But I guess I thought if it's like a quick flight, one of those, you know, boom, $90 or something like that to in-state flight. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's $90 and then it's two people and
yeah, but
a car,
you're going to have fun anyway.
And a hotel. Yeah, but you know it gets pretty expensive for 2 days. So, you know, plus I'm flying to Israel. I don't have enough money for to start flying around now. You know, besides, I hate flying, really.
How much
is
a ticket to Israel?
I'm not into it anymore. About $1,800.
Damn, are you kidding me?
Yeah. And this is high season now. It can even cost more. I found sort of like rather inexpensive, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can fly for a lot less when it's winter. You know, I always used to go there in the winter, but this year, because of the circumstances, I'm going in the summer, but at least I'll get to go to the beach and everything. The beaches there are amazing.
Really?
Yeah.
What are they like?
Really amazing. You know, I mean, it's the Mediterranean, so the water is warm for the most part. It's not like freezing like here.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of hot chicks, you know.
Yeah.
Families, you know, and it's fun. It's fun.
Just pack up the car tonight, today when you get home.
Uh-huh.
And like just
and just hit the road.
Hit the damn road. Have fun. I mean, that's great that you can just get up and leave and have the capability. I think that's great.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
We didn't used to have that, but now we have help with the station and stuff.
Yeah, so. Well, there you go.
Yeah, there
nice
you
hotel.
Go.
I mean, San Diego's beautiful.
Maybe we'll go to San Diego.
Have you ever been to Del Mar? It's north.
We just passed there, on the
way. Most people, it's a local town, but it's really nice.
It's beautiful.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Go get in a nice hotel on Del Mar.
Yeah.
And go to eat. Because it sounds like you guys just want to, like, lounge and have good dinners.
Yeah.
Go to Del Mar. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
It's really pretty.
Yeah. I like to go boating this time. You know, they always have those marinas there at the bay, Mission Bay.
Oh, okay.
And I always want to do it, but my wife's kind of scared of it, so we don't do it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But maybe I'll just go in by myself. But it's
boring. Go
boating?
What do you mean boating? Like
a speedboat, you know? When
you mean jet skis?
No, not jet skis, but a boat, you know, like a speedboat.
That's fun.
Yeah. They have jet skis, too. I'd like to do that as well.
I'm doing that.
Yeah. Those are fun.
Going to Austin when you're in Israel.
Yeah.
And I've got zip lining through canopies of trees.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever done that.
Yeah, I've done
You've
that.
Done it?
When
Is
I was
fun?
A kid, yeah.
It sounds
it's
like
a lot
fun.
Of fun.
I've never done it, so I think it's going to be
but
fun.
But like you said, you know, you mentioned like upper body strength when for surfing. Well, you're going to have that for... what were you going to do again?
No, zip lining.
Yeah, zip
but I
lining.
Think you're supported
you
in a harness.
You
you're
think?
Supported in a harness. Yeah, I'm not going to get up there with my freaking arms and try
no,
to hold my
body
weight.
No, you're just supposed to hang with your arms.
You do, but you've got a harness, dude. Like, I'm not going to get up there with my body weight and be like, oh, and try to hold all my ass. No, that's not
well,
happening.
Well, you better hope that they have one. When I used to do it, there wasn't any.
Oh, really?
It was just like a bar, you know, and...
Oh, well, that's probably, like, you know, something weird, backwoods in Israel or something. So then you did, like, you know, Jungle Kids when you're just nothing to do. You're like, hey, here's the handlebars, and let's just do it over a wire.
Yeah.
This is, like, a regulated.
This would be, like, in summer camp.
Yeah, well, this is, like, regulated and stuff.
Regulated?
It's regulated that you have to pay to do it, all that. So we're doing that.
I see.
Possibly skydiving. He's already bought the tickets to go skydiving. And,
wow. How much does something like that cost?
I think you got a deal on it. Yeah. Which I don't know if that's a good thing or not. Hey, is it good?
It's
got to
be a few $100 a person.
Yeah, I think so.
Wow.
And I'm like on the fence about doing it.
Yeah.
He's like, you're doing it. I said, listen.
So he bought you a ticket, actually.
For skydiving.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is he loaded?
No.
No?
No. I mean, just because somebody buys a skydiving ticket doesn't mean they're playing the stock market hardcore.
Well, you know, I mean, for the two of you, it would probably be $800 or something.
No,
no.
No? No. Not that much.
Okay, $600.
No, not at all.
There's no way
so.
It costs less than $300 a person.
No, it's less than that. I think you got a really good deal on it, too. Yeah, like $100 or something like that.
Wow.
Per person. But either way, I mean, one thing about Texas, which is really great, is that there's a lot of expendable income. Like, I forget, because when I go back home, a lot of people have pretty decent jobs. They make... Here, it wouldn't be considered a lot of money, but they make, let's say, $75,000 a year. which is over there, and it's so cheap to live. You have a lot of disposable income.
Really?
Yeah. Like $75,000 a year is a lot there.
Yeah.
Or if you even make $100,000, I mean, that's a whole of a lot of money there.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Well, it's
you're probably
here.
Talking about the smaller towns, though, right?
No, I'm talking like Houston.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's not as it's not like here. I mean, in L.A. is not as expensive as New York or San Francisco.
Right,
so,
right.
But it's still, I mean, compared to living here, I mean, my one of my apartments, even my room, I rented out, we had an apartment, but just the cost of my room plus garage, my garage, paying for my garage, and then my utilities cost more than people's mortgages.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were paying totaled like $2,300 a month at the time.
Uh-huh.
And it was a nice apartment
right.
and near the Grove.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but are you kidding me? $2,300 a month? And I paid, I mean, I paid a grand.
How many bedrooms?
It was kind of like 2.5. It had like a side room.
Yeah, that's about the price that they go for, you know, and especially if you're near the Grove, that's expensive there.
Yeah, well, we got a really good deal when we moved in, but, you know, through the years, we were there 4 years, they raise it each year.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I guess what I'm saying is, you know, the cost of living is, I mean, I knew people that had house mortgages. Like my aunt, her house, which is a two-story beautiful house across the street from the water, I think her mortgage is something like $800 a month.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm not freaking lying.
Yeah, so what the hell are we doing here?
Well, we're living our dream. But my point is you just can't compare because it'll drive you crazy. Like when I first moved here, I'd look at homes and I'd be like, oh my gosh, this house is $700,000 and it's only two bedrooms.
Yeah.
And it's the size of a closet.
Yeah, it was crazy here at one time a few years ago.
No, it's gotten better, but it's not realistic.
Yeah,
it's still not that great. I mean, it's better, but.
Yeah. A lot of people lost a lot of money on their houses.
That's true. But it's all relative, I guess. But going back to Texas, one thing that's pretty fascinating is I was around my brother and all his friends, and they're like young professionals and living outside of Houston. And the way they were talking, I noticed there was a lot of materialism. Now, I know this sounds weird saying that from living in L.A. You're like, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. L.A. is the material market of the world or whatever. But in L.A., there's a hybrid of a lot of different, I think, economic statuses. Socioeconomic status and... People are a lot of different places in their life.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people move here for their dreams. So even people that have made it and have money, a lot of them can identify with waiting tables and going after the next gig and going on auditions. And there's kind of an energy of people, regardless of where you are, that are kind of all going after something big.
Mm-hmm.
So that I think offsets the stuff. When you go back home, it's so 9 to 5 and people live for the weekend and they just kind of are like, I'm just going to have this job because it pays well. They're not passionate about their job.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just like, oh, look at the new toy I got. It's weird. Like, oh, I got a new flat screen TV. So it's a lot of stuff. It was really weird because I didn't grow up there in my adult life because I moved out here when I was 20. So
right.
I go back and I'm like, wow, I never realized that Texas or where I'm from, the area where I'm from, or, you know, the places I go, that there's so much materialism.
Yeah.
Not even that it's super flashy. It's just... All they got is their stuff and their toys. And they work all the time so they can play with their toys.
Mm.
It's weird. I don't know. It's weird. But they have money. They have a lot of disposable money is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So.
It sounds like a generalization, but maybe they do.
Well, of course it is. I mean, there's always exceptions, right? But, I mean, I'm talking generally.
So you're saying the majority.
I'm saying based on my experiences
and
what I noticed going out there in my adult life is that they're culturally it's a 9-to-5 working mentality. Nothing wrong with that, but with that, you get all this extra income and throw a lot of income on top of that.
Right.
There's not the passion and drive about what you do. It's all about when's the next vacation you take, and it's about the things you buy.
Right.
Whereas out here, I feel like there's so much of the process is passionate, and people are always going after something big.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make them any better. It's just I think people are willing to sacrifice things here because they're trying to go after something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas out there, it's all about, you know, having a nice, cozy, comfortable living.
Right.
And that's what I'm saying. So going back to what you're talking about the cost of, you know, doing trips and skydiving and things like that, it's really not a big deal.
It's not bad.
Yeah, because you have all this, you have expendable income.
Mm.
You know?
Okay. If you say so.
I think it's true.
Yeah.
Like out here, it's freaking $75,000 a year is okay if you're single.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a family on 75.
Yeah, it depends where you live.
That's
true.
I
mean, you know, you can have low cost of living and have some extra income, but who knows? Yeah. Anyway, have you seen Avatar?
Yes.
Really?
Duh. Where have you been, Sam?
Well, no, I haven't seen it until now.
When did you see it?
We got the video last night. And
really?
We didn't finish it because it's such a long movie, so there's still about 45 minutes left. But what an amazing film, huh?
I thought it was great. I loved it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really unusual, you know?
It transports you. They say that a lot of people felt depressed coming out of the movie because it was over and that they weren't part of the blue people.
Really?
Because isn't that a sweet world that they created?
It really is, but yeah, I mean, it's amazing that all this was created in a person's head, you know? It's like he had a vision of what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And that's amazing.
Well, I mean, you got to give it up to James Cameron. I mean, how many years was it? 13 years or 10 years?
Probably 10 years, I think. And
wasn't it? It was imagine. Titanic or something was his last movie, right?
Right.
Correct me if I'm wrong, people, but it was his last movie. And this took years, and they were developing the technology to do it.
Yeah.
And
it's amazing. I mean, you know, many of the scenes are all CGI. It's all animation.
Yeah. Well, they also have the it's not 3D, but what's it called?
No, it's 3D animation. It's just that
It's a new technology. You have to have the glasses to see it. But it's not just 3D. It's something where it gives depth perception.
That's 3D.
No. This is a new one.
Right.
It's you even heard about
it? Okay, it's new, but you still need the glasses.
Yeah, you need the glasses.
Yeah.
But it's something that he waited because they were actually invented the technology for this specific movie.
Right, yeah.
Which I could see how cool it was, but I didn't think it was that amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like yeah. You didn't see it with the glasses, right?
No. And it seems just fine, you know, on Blu-ray, and it's high definition, and it looks good. It really looks good.
Yeah.
And all the colors and everything, and just the story, you know, but it's a man's vision, and it was all created on the computers. It's amazing. And I remember a few years ago they said that, you know, one day you won't even need actors for movies. And there you go. You know, I mean, look, all the main characters are not really human.
Well, one thing that you're not realizing is that they made it possible to where each actor actually did those scenes.
Well, they do the motion capture, right?
Yeah,
they do the motion.
But they also use their facial expressions and everything.
Right, yeah.
And they imposed it into the character.
Right.
So I mean,
but it's still, I mean, those characters are not people, you know? So
no,
that's what I'm
true.
Saying.
Yeah.
But
still
I used to do 3D animation on the computer, you know. And when they say 3D animation, they don't mean with the glasses. They just mean that everything has a depth as opposed to like Disney films.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or like if you watch a SpongeBob or something, that's 2D
SpongeBob.
Yeah. But this is 3D animation. And I used to do this like back in the early 90s, believe it or not, when it was just... You know, when it was just starting out.
How did you get into that, though?
That was a pretty amazing thing. I mean, I saw the technology emerging, and I thought, God, I can make my own movies. And but I used it more for business purposes, and I would go to clients and say, look, we can take your product and build it on the computer and show it flying and into the screen, and you can do it and come in apart and, you know, show how it works. So it was pretty cool. It was a lot
and you
of
fun. Did that for how long?
About 3 years.
And did you do well with it? Did you make a lot
of
cash?
Yeah, I did very well with it. The only problem was I was working myself to death because nobody else knew how to do it, so I couldn't really hire anyone. And I thought it'd take me longer to train them than if I just did it myself. It's
really?
A lot of work, yeah.
So you did it for 3 years. You're like, I'm done with this.
Yeah, I just couldn't take it. The pressure was too much.
Oh, really?
Like, I got out of it, yeah.
Like air traffic controller type pressure?
Something like that. No, not really, you know, but you do have deadlines and you work with the computers and they screw up things, you know. And, yeah, after a while it just caught up with me.
Mm.
My problem was there was too much work. I couldn't handle it.
I've heard people say about, like, more European way of living is that they, you know, they work for a few hours and they take a huge siesta or whatever.
Right, yeah.
They go back to work and then every night they're at someone's house having dinner.
Yeah.
And they're very social.
It used to be like that. I don't know if it's like that anymore, but...
Okay.
But I think still, like in Israel, sometimes businesses will be closed from 2 to 4. People go home, take a nap, go back.
That's so interesting. And then when will they close for the day then?
7, 8 o'clock.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then they go to somebody's house afterwards.
I don't know what the hell they do. Everybody does something else.
Well, I was told that there's just a more social, more focus on people and social aspects.
Yeah, there is. There is.
And that here, people work themselves to the grind.
Yeah, here.
Do you agree with
that? Yeah, here the social life leaves something to be desired, really.
Mm.
especially in L.A. You know, I mean, there's places in the United States that I'm sure social life is great in the smaller towns. But not in L.A.
You don't think so?
No. No, I don't think there's a lot of social life. There's many lonely people here.
Well, you're right. But, I mean, I got three parties lined up this weekend.
Yeah, that's an audition. You're a party girl. But not everybody is.
We got to talk about that title, party girl. That's such a hard title because it's true. I am a party girl. But it means a lot of things to a lot of different people. You can't just say, oh, I love to party. Because what does that mean? That means, like, shots of tequila off someone's balls. You know, like, half naked, swinging from a chandelier, throwing up in someone's backseat of the car.
Sounds very sexy to me.
Yuck. But I'm just saying that's not me. Have I gotten lit? Yes. But no. I'm not, I'm pretty responsible.
You're not a party girl. Okay, but you're outgoing. You like to do things.
No, I mean, I am a party girl. I love going to parties.
Yeah.
Sue me.
Yeah.
But, you know,
there you go.
But I'm not, like, you know, doing anything weird or, I mean, I get really into it, dancing, having fun, chatting it up.
Yeah.
I just love people, but, and I'm a performer, so you put that together, that entertainer and loving people and then loving parties. Yeah, I'm going to be out there, but it's not like,
what does that mean?
It means everything I just said. Like, it's not like that.
Not like that,
nope.
Huh? Okay. Well, we're going to take a short break, so I guess your guest is probably not showing up. But we do have a sex therapist coming in and her co-host who have a show here on Fridays called Sexy Stuff, and that should be a lot of fun. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back right after this.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
Starting line, trapped on a circle that spins around in space. right. Enough gay Eurotrash rock. Let's get back to Sam and Kara in the morning. Kara in the morning. Right here on LA Talk Radio.
Listen to music and take a break, take a nap or something.
Sam, we gotta be on. Show must go on, my friend.
The show must go on.
You don't get to just take naps on radio. Yeah. Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being loyal listeners. We're gonna go take a siesta. We're Europeans.
Yeah. There you go.
I don't think that's the music that you'd be dying to listen to.
Oh, bless you.
So let's talk about sneezes.
You want to talk about sneezes?
She's not even listening. She's in Canada. But my roommate.
When's she coming back?
Saturday. Mm-hmm. She friggin' does this thing in the morning where she sneezes, like, I'm no joke, 20 times back to back to back.
Really?
And you can hear, like, that there's a snot buildup, and that she's like,
oh my God.
Then she, achoo, achoo, and, like, I'm sitting there, like, just go blow your freaking nose. Blow your nose. She won't blow it. She'll just sit there and just, achoo.
Yeah.
I'm like, if you just blew that shit out, you probably wouldn't sneeze another 50 times, and it probably wouldn't drive me crazy. So I always, like, go into the room and get her a paper towel or, like, a tissue and be like, here you go. Because I don't want to say, bless you 50 times. I'm like, right. Hey, how about nip it in the bud?
You don't have to say 50 times. I think once is enough.
No, but my point is it drives me crazy. It's almost like just...
No, I get it.
Let's just blow our nose. Mm-hmm. But then she gets mad at me that I bring out the tissue. She's like, I'm fine. I'm like, I hear your waterfall of snot in there, and she's got kind of a pronounced nostril area, mm-hmm. so I can see it dripping.
Oh God,
it's kind of mean to say.
Yeah, but it feels good to sneeze, don't you think?
You know, maybe
it really opens up
once
your
in
nose.
A while, but you know, here's the thing, just blow it.
Yeah.
And I think she doesn't do it because it pisses me off. You know, you get things, you're like, ha, 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 I'm just going to keep sneezing and piss her off. I think that's kind of what she does. That's okay. I love her anyway. What are you going to do? What are you going to do, Sam?
Yeah. What are you going to do? You know, some people are different than others. You know, we have to embrace all of them.
Okay, whatever.
Whatever.
I mean, I'm sure you do things that irritate your wife.
Yeah. So I mentioned to you on the break, we're going to have people from Housewives of New York. And
the
now
real,
you watch that show, right?
The Real Housewives of New York, yes.
Now, what are they showing? I mean, they show their lives or something?
Here's the thing. The franchise basically takes women that are affluent with lots of money or mm-hmm. have come from lots of money or are in a battle over lots of money mm-hmm. and usually think of themselves a lot grander than they are. Mm-hmm. You get where the humor is coming in.
Right.
And a lot of them are married. Some of them are not. Some of them are looking for love. Some of them are divorced. And they're usually in their 40s, I'd say. Mm-hmm. Most of the women are in their 40s or 30s, late 30s. And it's very entertaining because it's extreme. The lifestyle is extreme. It's also extreme narcissism. They fight like high schoolers.
Yeah.
And to them, it's normal.
Yeah.
And they let people film it. And so, yeah, it's entertaining. It's one of those guilty pleasures because you leave, you're like, I know I just lost 10 brain cells from watching this, or 100. But it was worth it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't know how much is real or how much is played up for the camera, but you just kind of have these bloated views of – they have bloated views of themselves. Mm. And it's weird because I think if you don't live in that kind of mentality, you kind of go, really? Really? But to them, they believe it. It looks like everything they say, it looks like they believe. And as a viewer, you're going, you've got to be kidding me. You really don't think this way, but they do.
Yeah.
Or they give off that they do. So,
yeah.
But at the same time.
I can't imagine people fighting on TV and in front of the camera.
Are you kidding me? Have you seen Jerry Springer?
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, that's similar.
No, I mean, it's pretty close.
But yeah, I mean, those people are really skanky.
The concept of the Real Housewives of New York, first of all, I do love it. I do love it. It's funny. It's very funny. Okay, mm-hmm. But when you look at the fact that it's possibly or supposedly real, that's mm-hmm. when it's kind of sad. But they go to a lot of fabulous dinners and fabulous they're always at a fashion show, mm-hmm. and they're always having some launch party, and it's all a bunch of bullshit. You could tell it's all orchestrated for the camera or to meet each other. And they get together, and instead of having fun and be like, woo, let's have a drink and let's dance or let's, you know, talk. Mm-hmm. There's always got to be a confrontation. Like somebody that hasn't resolved something with somebody else decides, hey, this would be the best time at a fashion show.
Yeah.
That's about to start in 5 minutes. Uh-huh. And it's just kind of like, it's so much chaos that you kind of go, come on, ladies, this is really embarrassing. You're in your 40s.
Yeah.
Can't wait to catch the next episode.
Yeah, apparently they will do anything for a little fame. You know?
I mean, a lot of people will. But all the franchises, it's the same thing. It's not just New York. They all that's what makes it.
Yeah.
You know, but it makes me wonder. It really makes me wonder because I don't live in that life. Not that I don't have drama at all, but I don't live in a high, affluent, rich type of living.
Right.
I haven't grown up that way, and the society around it or the culture around it is kind of interesting. I'm sure it's not true of everybody that has a lot of money, but
yeah. There
is some kind of weird psychosis. There is. I mean, if you're used to nice things all the time, it's like you kind of get bored of it, I would assume.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it,
well,
like,
you got to have a meaning in your life, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, let's use you as an example. I'm sure you're not a millionaire, but let's just use you.
I'm not even rich.
Okay,
whatever. Let alone a millionaire.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, my point is you have an opportunity to go away this weekend, and you're kind of like, I've already done it, I've already done it. And it's true for you. You've done it. You're like, okay, whatever. And I'm sitting here looking at it from another end going, that's so awesome. You can just get in your car, pay your gas, go to your hotel, pick out a nice hotel, and get away.
Yeah.
Like, who cares if you're going to, like, freaking Hawaii a million times? It's Hawaii. You know what I mean? Like, oh, you're going to Vegas or you're going to wherever. It's like, oh, that's still awesome. You're going. And it's exciting and it's fun. And you're getting out of L.A., so it's kind of fun to do something new. But it's kind of becomes, whatever, done it.
Yeah, you get used to it.
You get used to it, right?
Deal. Right.
So I kind of think that if people don't make conscious efforts as they have things and money, they I don't know, because I'm not in that position, so I really can't tell people what to do. But I just see that there's a numbness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're always doing fabulous things, and you're always doing fabulous things, do you even know that it's fabulous anymore?
I think so.
And then they invent things to bitch about. Yeah. But,
well,
you know what?
That's the way it goes.
They've got a faithful follower here. I watch it.
So, I mean, is this a show that goes on for a long time? How long
it's
has it
on,
been on?
It is on Bravo, and it's, I don't know how many episodes per season, I would say maybe like 6-7 episodes.
Oh, that's all.
And then they have a reunion finale after each one.
Yeah.
And it's very funny though. I mean, it's freaking funny.
Yeah.
One of the girls on there, ladies, she was married to a man who was a count, so she would always make people call her by her, the Countess. Like,
really?
That was her name.
He was a count?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
And so she was the Countess. And I think she's kind of like relaxed with it, but that was kind of funny that she was really big on her title.
Yeah.
I just think that's odd to me. It's like, just, you know, I don't know. There's something to be said for humility.
Mm.
And they got into a few seasons ago, but they got into a taxi cab, her and another lady, and or a limo, and she knew the driver. And she goes, oh, hey, Pierre, blah, 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 we're going here.
Mm.
And he goes, oh, this is Luann. And she laughs. She goes, it's Deceps. She's like, could you just have him call me by my full title? And she starts laughing. Are you kidding me? But the reality is that she wants to be addressed a certain way, and that he's the help, quote unquote, the help. And, you know, she's above him, basically. And I'm like, why? Like, you're both human.
I suppose, yeah. Well, you know, I don't know about these reality shows. I remember, you know, I used to like Survivor, and I would watch that. But then I get tired of it because it's the same all the time.
Okay.
The same with Big Brother. I watched a couple seasons of that. Did you ever see that one?
Yeah, my friend got really into it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, these people are fucking crazy, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they going to be calling via phone, or are they coming into the studio?
What, our guests?
No, New York. Real Housewives in New York.
Oh, they're going to call.
Okay.
Yeah, they're in New York.
Well, I mean, you never know. Sometimes people do press tours.
You think?
Oh, my gosh. I want to get all of the information. Mm. Oh, my gosh. It sounds great.
Yeah, you would like that, huh?
Yeah, I want to be like, so what the F? What happened? Freaking tell me.
Well, we'll have him on the show. I don't remember when, but soon. And let's listen to some George Carlin. I thought he's got a thing on saving the planet, and I thought that's pretty appropriate.
Oh, really?
Now with the oil spill and everything. So let's take a few minutes. George Carlin, one of my favorites.
You got people like this around you. Country's full of them now. People walking around all day long, every minute of the day, worried, about everything. Worried about the air, worried about the water, worried about the soil. Worried about insecticides, pesticides, food additives, carcinogens. Worried about radon gas, worried about asbestos. Worried about saving endangered species. Let me tell you about endangered species, all right? Saving endangered species is just one more arrogant attempt by humans to control nature. It's arrogant meddling. It's what got us in trouble in the first place. Doesn't anybody understand that? Interfering with nature. Over 90% of all the species that have ever lived on this planet, ever lived, are gone. They're extinct. We didn't kill them all. They just disappeared. That's what nature does. They disappear these days at the rate of 25 a day. And I mean regardless of our behavior. Irrespective of how we act on this planet, 25 species that were here today will be gone tomorrow. Let them go gracefully. Leave nature alone. Haven't we done enough? We're so self-important. So self-important. Everybody's going to save something now. Save the trees. Save the bees. Save the whales. Save those snails. And the greatest arrogance of all, save the planet. What? Are these fucking people kidding me? Save the planet? We don't even know how to take care of ourselves yet. We haven't learned how to care for one another. We're going to save the fucking planet? I'm getting tired of that shit. Tired. I'm tired of fucking Earth Day. I'm tired of these self-righteous environmentalists, these white bourgeois liberals who think the only thing wrong with this country is there aren't enough bicycle paths. People trying to make the world safe for their Volvos. Besides, environmentalists don't give a shit about the planet. They don't care about the planet. Not in the abstract, they don't. You know what they're interested in? A clean place to live. Their own habitat. They're worried that someday in the future they might be personally inconvenienced. Narrow, unenlightened self-interest doesn't impress me. Besides, there is nothing wrong with the planet. Nothing wrong with the planet. The planet is fine. The people are fucked. Difference. Difference. The planet is fine. Compared to the people, the planet is doing great. Been here 4.5 billion years. Do you ever think about the arithmetic? Planet has been here 4.5 billion years. We've been here, what, 100,000? Maybe 200,000? And we've only been engaged in heavy industry for a little over 200 years. 200 years versus 4.5 billion. And we have the conceit to think that somehow we're a threat? That somehow we're going to put in jeopardy this beautiful little blue-green ball that's just a-floating around the sun? The planet has been through a lot worse than us. Been through all kinds of things worse than us. Been through earthquakes, volcanoes, plate tectonics, continental drift, solar flares, sunspots, magnetic storms, the magnetic reversal of the poles, hundreds of thousands of years of bombardment by comets and asteroids and meteors, worldwide floods, tidal waves, worldwide fires, erosion, cosmic rays, recurring ice ages, and we think some plastic bags and some aluminum cans are going to make a difference? The planet isn't going anywhere. We are. We're going away. Pack your shit, folks. We're going away. And we won't leave much of a trace either. Thank God for that. Maybe a little styrofoam. Maybe. Little styrofoam. Planet will be here and we'll be long gone. Just another failed mutation. Just another closed-end biological mistake. An evolutionary cul-de-sac. The planet will shake us off like a bad case of fleas. A surface nuisance. You want to know how the planet's doing? Ask those people at Pompeii who are frozen into position from volcanic ash. How the planet's doing. Want to know if the planet's all right? Ask those people in Mexico City or Armenia or 100 other places buried under thousands of tons of earthquake rubble if they feel like a threat to the planet this week. How about those people in Kilauea, Hawaii who build their homes right next to an active volcano and then wonder why they have lava in the living room? The planet will be here for a long, long, long time after we're gone, and it will heal itself, it will cleanse itself, because that's what it does. It's a self-correcting system. The air and the water will recover, the earth will be renewed, and if it's true that plastic is not degradable, well, the planet will simply incorporate plastic into a new paradigm, the earth plus plastic. The earth doesn't share our prejudice towards plastic. Plastic came out of the earth. The earth probably sees plastic as just another one of its children. Could be the only reason the earth allowed us to be spawned from it in the first place. It wanted plastic for itself. Didn't know how to make it. Needed us. Could be the answer to our age-old philosophical question, why are we here? Plastic. Assholes. So... the plastic is here. Our job is done. We can be phased out now. And I think that's really started already, don't you? I mean, to be fair, the planet probably sees us as a mild threat, something to be dealt with. And I'm sure the planet will defend itself in the manner of a large organism, like a beehive or an ant colony can muster a defense. I'm sure the planet will think of something. What would you do if you were the planet trying to defend against this pesky, troublesome species? Let's see. Viruses. Viruses might be good. They seem vulnerable to viruses. And viruses are tricky, always mutating and forming new strains whenever a vaccine is developed. Perhaps this first virus could be one that compromises the immune system of these creatures. Perhaps a human immunodeficiency virus, making them vulnerable to all sorts of other diseases and infections that might come along. And maybe it could be spread sexually, making them a little reluctant to engage in the act of reproduction. Well, that's a poetic note. And it's a start. And I can dream, can't I? See, I don't worry about the little things. Bees, trees, whales, snails. I think we're part of a greater wisdom than we will ever understand. A higher order. Call it what you want. Know what I call it? The big electron. The big electron. Whoa. 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 It doesn't punish. It doesn't reward. It doesn't judge at all. It just is. And so are we. For a little while. Thanks for being here with me for a little while tonight.
Okay, George Carlin.
That was
talking
funny.
About the planet.
You know, I gotta agree.
Yeah, you gotta agree with those things. I mean, he's really, he talks about truth. You know, he just finds the funny angles on it.
Well, I gotta agree with the whole, like, you know, it's not about, oh, you guys care that much about a planet. You just really want to have a really nice, clean place for yourself to live.
Right. And to have some kind of a cause, you know, to look like they're doing something good, you know. But at the same time, it's like he's right. I mean, we can't ruin this planet. This planet can withstand so much.
And it can ruin us.
Yeah.
Or it can,
you know,
get rid of us,
whatever. It's not going to be any generation soon, I'm sure. So, you know, if it gets a little hot, global warming, so it does. You know, I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to worry about what happens to the planet 500 years from now? 1,000 years
well,
from now?
Well, I mean, part of me thinks, well, we should be good stewards over what we've been given. So I believe, like, God gave us this place to stay temporarily, kind of like on loan, mm-hmm. on lease. And are we going to kill it? No. But how we treat it is, I think it says more about who we are. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important, the heart of a person, like when you just see somebody litter, is that going to kill the planet? Maybe not. But the act of just, I don't want to throw it away. I'm going to just drop it right here.
Yeah, that's one thing I hate.
Yeah, but it's gross. It's lazy. It's just a real disrespect.
And it's rude because you're expecting other people to pick up your shit.
Well, it's disrespectful not only because do I like it? No, but not only to me because I don't like it, but it's disrespectful to the earth. Mm-hmm. And I mean, does the earth have feelings? No, I'm not saying it does, but it's like, come on, you know, there's no responsibility. So I do think we should have efforts to clean up what we've done and to...
Yeah, that goes without saying, you know, but that's just so we have a more pleasant environment to live in.
But no, not just because of that, but because of the heart behind it, because it's just wrong to trash where you live. Mm-hmm. It's right. Wrong. It's wrong where we get so much from this earth and then we just dump crap. I mean, I think that the principle I agree with, you know, you take care of this place. But do I, am I one of these like self-righteous, you know, Yeah, recycling every 2 seconds. And just, you know, these crazy liberals, that all they do is they want another bike path. Yeah, that was funny. He's like, what this world could use more is just another bike path.
Yeah, that's all we need right now.
But yeah, I don't think we're going to kill the Earth.
No, not anytime soon, that's for sure.
You know? Oh, that was really funny.
I mean, you know, it is worrisome, the things that we do. I mean, look at this oil spill. You know, I mean, that's like the worst ecological disaster we've ever had here. And there's no sign of its, you know, stopping.
No, it's stopped. They've maintained it.
Really?
Yeah, they've maintained it. They've got it, like, under control. But still, I mean, it's huge, you know?
Yeah.
But apparently, did you know that, you know, throughout the spread...
Are you sure about that? Why don't I see anything on that?
Well, let's look it up.
It just says that estimated size of the oil spill doubles, you know?
Well, I thought that they had it maintained with another pipeline type situation. But the reality is that, you know, the Earth actually emits throughout globally oil from its ocean floor.
We created that. I mean, we opened the hole.
I'm not saying it's the same thing, but I'm just saying there's going to be a long time before it's fully resolved. We know that.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, it's going to take years, if not decades. Apparently, the government has already spent $140 million and the oil cleanup. Mm-hmm. I wonder how much BP has spent so far.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
They said they said it's pumped between 20 and 40 barrels of oil a day into the Gulf of Mexico.
How much?
20 to 40,000 barrels
right,
a day.
Right, yeah. Which is 1.7 million gallons a day. That's a lot.
Yeah. It's not good.
No, it looks terrible, man. It really looks terrible. Well, you know, I don't know what we're going to do with this. I don't know what's going to happen, you know. And we think it's only happening somewhere else because we don't live there, but it's going to affect all of us, you know. The fishing, the wildlife, and whatever.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's about to hit the Louisiana coastline is what they're saying.
Right. You know, but this is kind of like what they were addressing in Avatar, you know, the people destroying the planet and, you know.
Yeah,
really caring, having their own interest.
I just think that there's so much involved where there is the destruction of man, where we just consume. But then I also think the people that are, like, spinning the, you know, conservation and take care of the planet, there's also a weird cult that's involved. It's like, like I said, I think we should take care of the planet, but I also think that there's this weird political initiative that's underneath the whole, let's take care of the planet. I don't know what it, I just think it's,
yeah,
it's all weird, you know?
It's all weird, man.
It's all weird.
It's all weird.
Sam-a-lama-ding-dong. Sam-a-lama-ding-a-ling. My mom was, I remember the first time I saw a penis, it was like my brother's, and she was bathing him, and she got him out of the bathtub, and like, you know, it was like a baby dong, you know?
Baby dong.
You know, he's like, what, 3 years old? I don't know.
Yeah.
But she was teaching him to dry with a towel, and she's like, Matthew, okay, now take the towel. Okay, wipe off your dinger. I'm like, whoever says the word dinger? But so for like the longest time growing up, I always thought that a penis was called a dinger.
Really?
Isn't that weird? This
kind of goes
ding a ling a ling ding 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 ling a ling ding 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 ding.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. So tell me something. I mean, when you see an erect penis, which is not very often, does that turn you on?
No, I run.
No?
No, of course it does. Yeah, what I'm saying is like genitally speaking, I don't want a picture of one on my wall. Whereas a woman's naked, you would like look at her. There's just something magnetic and mysterious about a woman's body, right? Mm-hmm. Naked. Whereas a man, it's like, oh, he's a good-looking man, or wow, he's really sexy. I'm actually thinking about an ex-boyfriend who was really attractive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's weird because like I just don't want to sit around and look at that area, but
yeah,
you know. A naked man, yeah. I mean, when you're getting geared up and you see a naked man, it's not a bad thing.
No, not at all.
Mm-mm.
Not at all.
But you got to be ready to go.
Yeah.
If you're not ready to go, because women are very complicated. So if I'm totally neutral and not vibing, or I'm not there, If somebody, not that this ever happened, but if a dude walked in all totally naked with a, I would be like, what the, you know, I would not, it wouldn't turn me on. Whereas a man could right. not be expecting anything and a woman walking naked right. and he'd be like, oh,
yeah.
right.
That's
so it's not, we're just not built the same way.
No.
Yeah. I think they say, you know, women get turned on between the ears.
Yeah. That's why I was wondering if it turned you on, but I'm sure it would, right?
No, not unless I was already turned
An
on.
An erect penis.
Like,
no?
If I was already turned on...
I see, okay.
...with that person, and then, boom, here comes...
Mm-hmm. But just a picture won't do it for you.
No.
But I thought you said yes in the beginning.
No, I'm saying if... Okay. If a woman's already... This is what I think, anyway. I don't know for every woman, but... If a woman's already in a relationship where she's turned on with the person, like they're in the act of making out or something...
Right.
...and then, boom, he drops his drawers...
Uh-huh.
And there's,
okay, so you're saying in the heat of the moment, yes.
Then you look down there, you're like, okay, great, because it makes sense and it's sexy. But no, I just, if you just walked in like, hey, look what I got going on here.
Yeah. Look at this erection.
Yeah, it's not going to do anything.
Really?
No.
That's interesting.
I mean, what do you think about looking at dongs?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Well, when I, you know, I mean, it's part of it, you know. I mean, it's still sex and everything. So, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, not seeing, you know, a dick by itself, but when you see it in action or whatever, it adds to it.
Oh, yeah. Know? Well, I agree with that. I mean, yeah. it's definitely a sexual, it's stimulating.
Yeah, that's why in porn, you know, I mean, the guys, you rarely even see their faces. They're just props there, you know. It's just because people want to see a chick next to a, you know, to a hardened cock.
Those are nasty words.
Yeah, I know. Why do I even have to think twice about saying that? You don't get offended by anything, right?
Well, I think that those are personal words. Like if you're gonna say
they're not personal words, people say it all the time. They're
yeah.
slang.
I don't know. I'm just saying personally.
That's the way
I
talk.
Private.
You know.
That's fine. Well,
so,
whatever.
Yeah.
Nobody's censoring you. I'm just telling you how I feel.
Good, good. I just want to make sure.
But no. Have you looked at other dudes' wangers just to compare?
No, to compare, no. But
have you ever?
You know,
I mean, you've seen one though. I mean, you've seen other guys.
Yeah, I mean, you see. Yeah, I mean, but not hard ones in real life.
You've
only
seen
porn,
so
in
you've
porn,
seen it.
You see it, yeah.
Yeah. What do you think when you see another dude's winger? Wang-a-ling a ding dong.
What do I think? I don't know.
Do you wonder if his is bigger? Do you wonder if his works better? I mean, what do you think?
No, I don't wonder that at all.
Really?
Yeah. It just you know, it looks nice next to a girl's face or inside of her or whatever. You know? I'm just prepping you for the interview that's coming up next.
She's probably...
Because we're going to be talking a lot about sex.
That's fine. That's cool. I love sex. We'll
yeah,
talk about it.
Good. So we're going to take a break. We'll be back right after this.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
Don't you hope it's going well?
our shitty talk radio proliferates the internet, two people have teamed up to save the world. It's Sam and Kara in the morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
Okay, Kara, and we have our guests in the studio. Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning.
We have Lori Buckley and Mark Phelan in the studio. And you guys have the show called Sexy Stuff.
We do.
Which
She's
says
sexy
everything.
And I'm stuffed.
I see. You're stuffed with sex, right?
Bro, yeah.
Something
he
like
wishes,
that.
He wishes, yeah. That's funny.
I'm full of it.
Yeah. So your show is on at noon every Friday.
Correct.
And tell us a little bit about it. What do you guys talk about?
Well, we certainly talk about sex. We talk about a lot of different things. We talk about things that are happening in the news around sex. We talk about great sexual products that are available. We have sexy people as guests mm-hmm. who are usually pretty knowledgeable about what's going on. So we consider them experts and go-to people around all different things about
right.
sex.
Right. So you don't mean sexy-looking people, but sexy people.
Definitely
well,
not.
No, they're sexy-looking, too. We're going to have a very sexy woman on today. So,
really? Well, I'll make sure I'll be here.
Yeah, you'll be there. So, yeah, it's really just talking openly about sex and relationships. And look, there's a lot of sexual information out there, and not all of it is, well, it's just not also really reliable or accurate. So we want to make sure people get accurate, good information. We try to make it fun, answer people's questions, anything they want to talk to us about sex, we're there to answer.
And it's cool because you talk about anything. Nothing is off the table, right?
That is true. Yeah.
It's on the table. It's under the table. I mean, that's where you get the variation.
Everywhere it can happen. Yeah.
Little bit of everything. And I am a sex therapist, so I have a lot of experience in this as well. So I get to not only be the interviewer, but also an expert as well.
Right. Mark, are you in the business of sex as well?
I've been in the business of sex since I was about, I think it was 14 and a half. It was a Sunday afternoon. It was cloudy. I'm an actor.
Are you really?
And I've been in showbiz for longer than a lot of people have been alive. But I've known Dr. Buckley since she was just a young child.
Really?
That sounds really perfect.
Yeah, like, where's this going?
And so that one Sunday afternoon when she came in. We became friends 100 years ago. And
really? We used to date.
Yes.
Date you, really?
There is a history.
Yes. Wow.
What age did y'all date?
Let's see.
We were young. I was like 20.
You were like 21.
Really? And so you've known 62. Each other for a long time.
Yeah.
You were 62, she was 21. Sounds like a perfect match.
It's L.A.
And it didn't, I mean, it wasn't that long lasting. The friendship has been
she
much longer.
She dumped me. I have to take no ceremony in saying she dumped me.
Yeah.
And then I went to prison. No, we dated for a while and we just moved on into our lives and then all of a sudden came back together and moved on. And in the course of all that, she's not only accumulated phenomenal life experience, but then got the credential. And the best thing about the information she gives is not only really useful, but she puts it in real, easy to understand terms.
Right.
And even as a layperson, you can sit and go, okay, now I get it. Because sometimes the sex therapy type thing go too far in the therapy.
Right.
And they start the classic psychobabble. Well, you know, if you have derivative problems, it kind of extend from a family thing. And she, look at her. I mean, she is sexy stuff.
Yeah.
So that pervades the entire argument as well. So it's great to be around it. Mm-hmm. So I get to pick up on these great information and all this little innuendo. But at the same time, she really provides a great service.
Mm.
I mean, it's not
absolutely.
Just sex. It's the relationship and the dynamic of sex in a relationship, which is so huge.
Right, yeah.
I mean, I think...
And that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, what is it that you do? What's a sex therapist?
Oh, that's a good
I mean,
question.
It's not like a sex surrogate, right? Although
right.
I'd love to be one of those.
One of the ideal jobs, yeah. Well,
I think
that's
on Craigslist.
It can happen. Yeah, no, that's such a good question because I think a lot of people don't really know what I mean when I say that. I'm trained as a psychologist. I'm a licensed clinical psychologist and really specialize in relationship issues. So all all kinds of relationship stuff and sexual things. So I'm also a certified sex therapist, which means that when people come in, either as individuals or as a couple, I can sit with them, we can go over all of their challenges, their concerns, and hopefully work in a positive way so they can have a better relationship, and that includes having better sex. So sometimes there'll be people who come in with like typical things that men would come in with, for example, are maybe erectile difficulties, right, or I'll call it involuntary ejaculation. Yeah. You know.
So those are things that can be addressed in therapy?
They can. With me, it's through talk. Uh-huh. There's no touching, none of that going on. So it's all through talk, and I do give people lots of things to do in between our sessions. So if they're with a partner, they'll be doing exercises with their partner, and if they're alone, there are things that they're working on solo.
I see. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Wow. Do you prescribe medications for things or no? I mean, when somebody comes in, I mean, do we believe in...
Yeah, they're dropping stuff off the building across the street.
Yeah, I didn't even get to the question. No,
everybody's getting distracted.
No, yeah, exactly. But on the erectile dysfunction, do we believe in Viagra? Do you go into the meds or do you go no, it's something else?
Oh, such a good question. Look, there are people who can benefit from medication, whether it's Viagra or something else. I don't prescribe medication. I'm not a medical doctor.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm a clinician. However, when people come in, I work with them so we can rule out what might be
causing the
problem.
Okay, if it's like a biological issue or if it's a...
Right. Although if there is a man who comes in with erectile difficulties, I will always recommend that he goes and gets a thorough physical, because having troubles with erections is a precursor to oftentimes a serious medical condition. So we want to check it out. But by the time they come to see me, usually they've done that. The first person they usually go to is the doctor to get the prescription or, you know,
to check it out, make sure the bits and parts are
right,
fully functioning, ready to rock. Okay, cool.
But it's not that simple. Okay. Sexuality is so multi-layered. There's so many different variables. So oftentimes it's relational, it's psychological, it's emotional. Sometimes people just come to me to get some information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just don't have the education. And again, we might say, well, there's so much out there, but how do you really discern between the good stuff and the not so good stuff?
Yeah.
Right, yeah. And it helps when you're talking to someone professional who knows what they're talking about, you know? And so you help them figure out also if it's a physical problem or a psychological problem.
Correct.
And
yeah,
things like that. Now, what's a common problem that women have? I mean, obviously men have problem with, like you mentioned, you know, erectile dysfunction, ejaculation, things like that. What are some of the concerns that women have when they come to you?
The most common complaint I hear from women or concern are orgasm difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they haven't had an orgasm ever, or maybe they can't orgasm with a partner, and desire.
Right.
Desire actually probably is even more, you know, more... What's the word?
Commonplace?
Commonplace, we'll say, yeah.
Okay.
That I hear much more often than the other.
Like they don't have the sex drive, or they don't feel desired, or what do you mean by desired?
Well, actually, both.
Oh, okay.
Oftentimes, if women aren't feeling desired, they're probably not going to feel much desire.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're just not, they're not feeling horny, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I have a lot of friends that are like... Yeah, I've heard also that could be a hormonal issue, too.
It can, but
sometimes, more
than often it isn't, really.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, it's usually, again, about education. We can educate them on things that they can do, because oftentimes there's things that they're doing or not doing that might be causing the problem. It could also be relational. And a lot of women will come to me, and they think there's something wrong with them because they're not feeling horny.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we find out after thorough questioning that, well, you know, maybe... they're not really liking their partner, or sex has been, you know, pretty boring or not very satisfying, or they expect to just feel spontaneously horny, which is really not often the case, unless you're young or in a new relationship. So just giving
young.
Them that.
Bastards.
Walking around with an erection all day.
You know,
pesky 4-hour erections.
You know, and couples, you know, well, you know, the list goes on for all of the couples' concerns, but oftentimes it's because they have a difference in desire, or they're not having sex as often as they want, or the way that they want, or they're having communication difficulties, so they're just finding themselves fighting all the time and not feeling the love so much.
Wow.
The good news is these things are easily fixed.
Predominantly women clients, men clients, or is it equal?
More couples than anything.
Okay.
I would say probably 60%. 60% couples, and then I'm going to say probably maybe 25% men and then 15% women.
Oh, interesting. When you get a couple that comes in to see you, how is, I mean, everybody's got a different level of comfort of talking about it because it's an intimate situation. And some people, if they aren't performing the way they want or there's, you know the issues probably more than I can even address as far as like what's going on, like shame or whatever the issues could be. Mm-hmm. And they come and they sit in your room. I mean, how does that work as far as that first kind of meeting? And do you find that people are quick to kind of go, okay, here's the deal. George just does it quick or whatever. Or is there really like this, you have to kind of warm them up, do a little foreplay on them to get them to just talk about it? I mean, what is that's typical situation?
Yeah, I'm going to stay away from the foreplay thing. But it's difficult to go to a therapist all by itself. You know, to sit there and talk to somebody about things that maybe you haven't really spoken out loud before or don't know really how to address is a difficult thing. And then talking to somebody about sex, somebody who you've never met before, is really a difficult, challenging thing. So do people feel uncomfortable initially when they come see me? Yeah, many do. Mm-hmm. Most do, I could even say. My job is to get them to feel comfortable, and they know it's a safe place. And that's really one of the great things about what I do. People know when they walk in the door, this is a safe place to talk about all of these things that I have been feeling shame around or have questions about. And, I mean, I'm so honored that they trust me that way and that they're so open with me. And
wine doesn't hurt either. I mean,
Yeah, I don't serve them wine, though. But
have a little shot glass. Hey, listen, we're all human. Just friggin' what's going on? Tell me. Merlot?
I do sometimes recommend a glass of wine at home. Yeah.
Not
a bad idea.
I'm just playing. She does not recommend wine. That was just...
And we should point out that I am in no way involved with her professional therapy sessions. I don't want anybody to be freaking out. Is that... creepy guy gonna be there?
Let me talk about. Well,
observing.
Two That's things right. I want to say.
One, giving comments. Come on, buddy, get it out.
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
Just intimidate him into erection.
Mark's role, in the show for me is he makes me better. He, he relaxes me. He keeps it fun. He keeps it real. He's, he's the lay person, and he's also the man. So we get a little
and
male
the lay
point
is
of
the
view.
Key word there.
Yeah, Mark's working on that part, but we're working on that. Yeah, so I get to, I get to have someone I can, just kind of be with. He talks about the layperson's point of view, and he comes up with some really good questions, and certainly the man's perspective.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's nice having him there, and he keeps it fun for me, and I think makes me so much better as a host. And I think the show is really nice because a lot of people who come in to see me, they've seen me on TV, they've heard me, on iTunes or, on LA Talk Radio, and so they feel comfortable with me. It's like, okay, I already know you. I kind of know how you are, and so that's nice.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. One of the reasons I do.
So, Mark, so you never had any desire to get into sex therapy or anything.
Using the words desire and sex in the same sentence makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That's a problem I'm working on. No, I mean, I have a master's in education.
So oh, really?
I am smart. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is, the dynamic that is required, I am more of a listener, and I think I would spend an entire 45-minute session talking.
Right.
And say, can I talk now, doctor? No. Let me tell you another thing. When I was a kid, I'm just too much of a performer. I think I'm a good listener, but when I'm bored, okay, that's it.
Yeah.
Okay, enough of your whining. Now, have you seen this movie? I saw this great thing. So it would be a disaster.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating to kind of be on the inside.
Yeah.
Because I've never actually seen any of her actual therapy, because obviously all privileged and confidential, but when we get viewer mail or listener mail, you get an insight of what these people's problems really are,
right.
And then these great guests we have, they give more insight, and it's kind of like I get to sit back and watch all this.
Right.
And that is the fascinating part.
Yeah. That's cool. Are you originally from L.A.?
Florida, originally.
Oh, really? And when did you move here?
I moved here in the early 80s. Exactly. I was here about 6 months before I met the Miss
Buckley.
That's
right. I see. Okay. So you were like 20 something years old when you moved. Wow. That's pretty cool. And you, Lori, are you originally from L.A.?
I am. I'm a native.
Really?
Yeah.
Very unusual,
That's
huh?
very unusual.
Yeah.
How did you gravitate towards sex therapy? I'm sure you started off like, going to school? You found out you want to do
I guess psychology or therapy. I'm not exactly sure the word.
Yeah, they're the same thing.
Okay, and then you decided, how did it kind of transition for you where you were like, man, I'm good at this?
She's
like,
probably just a horny teenager.
Well,
there's a lot of horny people that can't do what she does, though, I'm sure. Like, you have a skill set, so I'm curious how it developed, like, your path, you know?
Yeah, no, great question. And, look, I always was interested in sex.
Well, just the European, we always call it the European, but that any outside of the United States kind of mentality about sex anyway. I mean, topless beaches, et cetera, the common sense angle, I think.
Right.
Is always lost here. We seem to be becoming more and more conservative.
Right.
Ooh, can't show that. Ooh, a woman breastfeeding in public. Ooh, it's disgusting. It's like,
you're
give
right.
me a break.
Right about that.
Right. They don't mind their kids playing games where they're blowing people's heads
exactly.
off. But God forbid they see somebody naked. You
right.
know? So
right. The Janet Jackson thing is the quintessential nonsense moment.
Right.
We're all traumatized. We're watching men kill each other on a football field. But I saw a nipple!
Yeah. God forbid, right?
Right? I mean, it's crazy. And because there's so much stuff out there, it's really important for parents to be comfortable.
Oh,
well, more importantly, for their children to feel comfortable being able to talk to their parents about things so they can get good information. We can lead them in the right way. They know they can come to us and talk to us. So really important. I also have always been really interested in relationships. So both of my parents were married and divorced. 4 times.
Whoa.
So grew up with a lot of dysfunction. I've had my own share of it, and have worked to the other side of it. And I was always interested, like, what makes people stay together? Like, what is love? And I was always just interested in that. And I knew that I wanted to be a psychologist, but I also knew that I wasn't really enjoying the sitting around listening to people, you know, who had serious depression or serious mental illness.
That's
right.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not important.
No, it's just not your. That's okay. You're figuring out what your thing is. You're like, ooh, this just that wasn't where I was going with it.
You took it
to a dark place.
Exactly. It just wasn't my thing. And there are people who love that, and you know, God bless them, or working with children. And I love working with adults. I just love being there for them and being able to help them in a way it's for me a little bit more instant gratification than traditional psychotherapy, which, you know, you plant seeds, it goes on and on and on and on, and, you know, hopefully you can help people change their life. But when you're doing relationship therapy or sex therapy, it's pretty quick. You get, you know, results quickly, and it's so beneficial, and I love that.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's cool.
So I'm very, very passionate about it. I'm just love what I do, and I look forward to seeing my clients every day. So
have you seen Meet the Fockers?
Yeah.
And the mom, what's her
name? Barbara Streisand.
Barbara Streisand. Mm-hmm. She does sex therapy, but she, like, straight up, they're like, you know, they're simulating positions. I think that they're having, like, they're straight up doing, like, yoga, but, like, it's not yoga, okay? It's like, yeah, you know. So
right.
Is that what you do or no? I'm just trying to get a feel for the listeners as well so they understand.
Yeah, you know, it's a
She's
little.
She's never done that with me.
Yeah, you haven't been around long enough, that's why.
It's a little exaggerated, but not completely off. You know, stereotypes are based on some truth, and that is a stereotype of what a sex educator. She's more of a sex educator.
Uh-huh.
And I do that as well, where we do workshops. As a matter of fact, we're going to be talking about that today at noon with my guest, Melanie Hudson, who is a tantra educator. We are going to be doing a couples workshop, a day-long workshop in July. Where we're going to
sign up, Sam.
We're going to be doing
some
of that.
There you go.
Oh, it's going to be.
If there's sex, I'm there.
Great. I'm telling you, it's going to be great. No sex. No, you know, everyone's going to be wearing their clothes.
Okay.
But it is going to be a great workshop. So we do things like that, where, you know, where people are looking into each other's eyes and talking about sexual fantasies. So yeah, there's some truth there. Again, just was probably a little exaggerated in the Barbara Streisand character.
Oh, okay.
But fun to watch.
It was hysterical though. She had like an underground sex education class, and she's like, "Hi." Hurry up. Like, it was funny. So I was just curious if that was what you
Yeah,
what
and you know, I have the obligatory
toy
vulva pillow in my office, you know. So
what's a vulva pillow?
Where you
did
don't
you
get it on an airplane.
I see. Okay.
Oh, my God. I wish I knew the company. I wish I did, because they're so great. You know, really, it looks like a pillow, but it's also a puppet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
if you don't have a problem when you walk in, you will have a problem when you leave, when the talking vulva starts telling you things.
That's funny. So, you know,
that's freaking hysterical, though, if you're like, I like it when you're like making the vulva move. I love it. That's a good way to talk through the
what would your vulva say?
Over someone's shoulder.
Yeah.
Hello.
I haven't done that, but you know what? It's not a bad idea. Yeah. Now, if I could just find a penis pillow, I have a whole new workshop going on.
Oh, my gosh. It's freaking
like
hysterical.
It. Brilliant. I love it. Thank
Make sure you get good voices, though. Wouldn't be good. I am the Volvo. Come over here.
Yeah, you need to.
I like when you do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what do you do with that? I mean, what do you do with is it just
intimidates
like
people? Yeah. You walk in and you can't what the hell is it?
Well, sometimes I'll be talking to people and they are staring at it. They're staring. And, you know, and of course I have the vibrators and the DVDs and mm-hmm. look, it's a comfortable place to talk. It's sex. So
right.
look, there's nothing wrong with talking about sex. Matter of fact, it's really a great thing to be talking about.
Right.
So I want them to know, hey, this is a cool place. And I often recommend sex toys and sex videos, educational videos and things mm-hmm. like that. The pillow or puppet is anatomically correct. So mm-hmm. I can... And you'd be amazed at how many women don't know where their clitoris is.
Really?
It's amazing.
Wow.
I mean, they really, really don't.
How can
don't.
You miss it? I mean,
you need a Thomas guide or the GPS.
Yeah, it even has a G-spot. So we can, you know, I can show them where all, you know, really all of the clitoral tissue is. It's not just that little dot.
Right.
So there's, you know, there's lots of, there's the crura, which is the legs, and there's the G-spot, and there's the labia. So we're able to go through it in the shaft and show them everything. And, yeah, they seem pretty interested. They usually learn something.
Yeah. That's amazing. So there's people that don't experiment with themselves, right? I mean, they're very, like...
They don't masturbate.
Mm-hmm. They don't explore themselves.
Right.
You know, I think for women, there's a lot to explore with a mirror or whatever.
Right.
And so you're saying a lot of women don't actually go through that, right? They're like very reserved, very, I don't know, repressed maybe?
Well, we'll just say uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable.
Yeah, they haven't done it. They feel uncomfortable with it. Maybe they got some messages that it's not an okay thing to do or
right.
that it's wrong. And so, you know, my job is to open them up to the possibilities of what they can do. I'll never tell people what to do.
Right.
You know, they need to do what they want. And I always say that's an important thing, too. Always do what you want. Let's just look at why you might want it.
I see. Mm.
So someone might come in and say, yeah, I don't, I've never masturbated. I've never looked at my, well, usually say vagina, but I like to make the distinction between a vagina and a vulva.
Uh-huh.
The vagina is the opening, the
right.
vaginal opening. The vulva is all of
like
the
bits. The whole thing.
Yeah, it's the clitoris and the labia and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So properly we want to call it the vulva. But they say, I've never looked at it, and I feel uncomfortable with it. I think it's ugly, and it smells bad, and I don't really want anybody going down there. And so, you know, first thing we need to explore is, well, why would it be a benefit for you, or why would you even want to?
Right,
I'm not just
going
to say,
right.
okay, you need to go get a mirror,
yeah.
and you need to get a vibrator. And so once they understand the benefits, which is feeling comfortable with their body, which is feeling comfortable with their sexuality, which is learning what they like, learning how to experience an orgasm,
mm-hmm.
which can add to sexual pleasure, which can add to their communication with their partner so they can let their partner know what they want. It really does benefit not just them individually, but it benefits the relationship as
right.
well.
Right.
I've had a good friend of mine who's much older who's never had orgasms mm-hmm. with a partner.
With a partner.
Yes. And I'm no sex therapist, although I like to pretend I can do everything.
You so. Might know some things.
Well, I mean, I don't have a whole huge track record, but I was trying to give her some mechanical suggestions.
Okay.
Like, try this, do this, blah, blah, blah. And I said, call me tomorrow. Like, I want the details. I want the play-by-play of how this went down. And it was unsuccessful for her. So I'm wondering, how much of it do you find with women that can't achieve orgasm, which I find to be kind of... seems to be a lot of women that have that I know as friends that have a really hard time, whether they're married or in relationships or whatever, that can't climax or don't know how.
Right.
And how much of it do you attribute to, like, mechanical issues, and then how much do you attribute it to, like, other stuff, like emotions, trust, all that stuff? I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's all of those things. I mean, you know, just the word, you know, trying to achieve an orgasm.
You're working, right?
If you're trying to achieve an orgasm, guess what? It's just not going to happen.
Mm.
Because you experience an orgasm when you have a very intense, heightened arousal.
Mm.
In other words, when you're experiencing a lot of pleasure and you're relaxed and excited at the same time. And if you're in your head thinking, I mean, there's so many things that get in the way, right? Thinking, oh, oh, what about my belly or my thighs, or what's he thinking about, you know, this, or am I doing this right, or, oh, I wish he would just get this over with, or, oh, I have to have an orgasm, oh, he's probably getting tired. I mean, all of these things, or, oh, shoot, the kids, I got to go pick up the kids in an hour, or, oh, I have this thing at work, or, oh, I don't want to miss Desperate Housewives. I mean, you just, you know, the list goes on and on and on of the things that get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
First, we do need to say that about 70% of women need direct clitoral stimulation to experience an orgasm.
Right.
So guess what? When you're with a partner, probably not going to happen, especially with intercourse, because you're not getting...
See, I'm surprised it's only 70%. I think it'd even be higher, you know, because, you know, it's very seldom that you hear of, like, vaginal orgasms or something without manual
stimulation. Let me clarify. I want to ask this because I mean I got the part, so I want to get some stuff straight. So
you don't have any. Yeah, no, you're not talking.
You're not talking. Okay, so you're saying 70% of women have to have direct. Okay, but that can happen during intercourse.
Yes.
Okay. So, but that's not the same thing as vaginal, or is it the same thing?
It's a little bit different. But it's hard to say, because direct clitoral stimulation, what I mean by that is, you know. Yeah. Actually stimulating the clitoris. There are ways that you can get some stimulation, direct stimulation, mm-hmm. through intercourse.
Yeah.
And certainly there's going to be indirect, because you've got something going in and out of your vagina. Mm-hmm. Your clitoris is being stimulated just indirectly. Mm-hmm. And then there's the G-spot. Mm-hmm. So there are women who do, mm-hmm. who absolutely, you know, at least 30%, mm-hmm. have orgasms with partners, but we'll say the majority of women don't. Another reason, it's not just the clitoral stimulation, but again, we have a partner. So there's lots of other variables that get in the way, worrying about what they're thinking, worrying about what they're liking or what they're wanting, worrying about our body, all of those things that get in the way of that. Also, does he really know how to do it? Is he going at the right speed? Is he doing it the right way? I mean, if he's doing, you know, the in and out porn kind of sex, probably not going to really do it for most women.
Yeah.
Most women want it slow, rocking, deep, you mm-hmm. know, that kind of thing is usually more enjoyable, although a little fast in and out is nice now and again too. Mm-hmm. But how's the man going to know unless we're communicating with them?
Mm-hmm.
And many women and men don't feel comfortable doing that. So it's not just the clitoral stimulation. There are G-spot orgasms. Women do experience, not all women.
So talk about the G-spot, because some people wonder, is it a myth? Is it a specific spot that, like, is protruding, or is it, like, kind of like different on everybody else's, like the little treasure map, boom, that's where that's where it is here. Oh, yours might be over here. What would you say about that?
Yeah, it's not like a little dot, but it is an area
in the... It just feels more...
In the upper front part of the vagina, and it's just in about like 2 to 3 inches, so it's not very far. You don't need a big giant penis to stimulate it.
Uh-huh.
But maybe, you know, some width is good.
Yeah.
But also good with fingers there's lots of really great sex toys out there that's meant for that. So it is an area in the upper front part, few inches in, of the vagina. And I definitely encourage women and their partners, whether they're women or men, to explore that area, because for the women who do enjoy it, they really, really enjoy it. Not all women do. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, in my experience, I don't know, Mark, I mean, have you been able to explore G-spots, things like that? I mean, did you find the treasure?
I majored it in college.
Did you?
Yeah.
Any single ladies, right? Okay, let's put your name on the website.
Bow, bow. No, bottom line is, the great thing about talking about sex is when you think of the most intimate thing you can have with someone, you're totally naked, you're inside the other person in one way, shape, or form, and yet you can't talk. You can't talk about what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the simplest thing about making it all happen and making it work is by saying, no, a little less left, a little less. Oh, that's good. That's good. That's good.
Right.
It's the simplest communication in the world, because as a guy, you always want to go, I'm the best. You know?
Yeah.
She's going to say I'm the best she ever had. I mean, you want to set that goal, but also you want the woman to really appreciate your effort. And at the same time, you want to get the same effort in return. But if you don't talk about it, you can't just hop aboard, bum, 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 hey, okay, I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah.
Hey, it was great, wasn't it? Well, maybe it wasn't. And then when you call tomorrow, I'm busy. What? How can you tell you? What are you talking about? You got to understand that it's a whole dynamic. That's the beautiful thing about Dr. Lori's show, is the mental component. the emotional component along with the physical component. Because as she's saying, average women don't even know their own parts.
And
men. G-spot, exactly. Yeah. The G-spot, the location. What more fun is that? Let's go find it.
But you have found this before, right? I mean,
absolutely.
I know you have talked about this on the show before.
I gotta say.
Yeah.
No, because I am enlightened enough to take the time to explore. I happen to be of the old school Renaissance man that I want to knock somebody's socks off.
Right.
And whatever it takes to do that, I will do.
Right.
At the same time, as long as it takes. And that's what
makes... That's a good man.
Well, I mean, it's fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fun. You try so hard to get them there. Get them naked. I'm not going to waste three seconds and over with. I'm going to take as long as I can.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the reason quickies aren't fun for me, because I like to take as long time.
The time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not looking to catch a plane here, you know?
I know. I think the ideal is if you can get to a point, like for me, foreplay is just as important as the intercourse, you know? I mean, you know, even more so. And because there's a lot of exploration going on, you know, and stuff like that. And that's a way to really find out what your partner wants, what they don't like, you know, and things like that. So with just intercourse, you're not really getting far.
Right. I mean, it's great, but it's just one piece of the pie.
Right.
But I'm just wondering, Sam, have you found the G-spot?
No, I've never found the G-spot. And from what I've heard, I think I know where it is. But I missed the spot.
How would you – I mean, that's what I'm asking. As a man, how would a man know if it's not a physical –
You can actually feel it.
Oh, you can. That's what I was going to ask.
Okay.
There's a physical, like, boom, like a boom, or like a, or what is it, like a button, or is it like a light?
Let's have a lesson.
It's like a spongy area, they say, right?
It is. And, it's a little sponge. It feels a little ridgy, almost like a finger that's been in a bathtub too long, or like the top of your mouth.
I felt that, but it never got any response, any additional response.
So you're saying not every woman is receptive to it, or
not every woman is, and a lot of women, it's an area that sort of needs to be honed, you know, because at first it might feel a little uncomfortable. For a lot of women, it feels like they have to urinate at first, but one, you got to stick with it, Sam. You got to stick with it. So once you find that area, and I would recommend that make sure the woman is aroused first, because then that area is going to swell a little bit, so you'll be able to feel it easier. It'll also be more responsive.
Yeah.
And make sure your finger or fingers, two fingers is kind of good, make sure they're well lubed. Mm. So use a lot of lubricant. She may be self-lubricating,
exactly.
That's great, but it can't hurt. You can't have too much lube. And just go in there. And by the way, you can, while you're stimulating her G-spot, you can also stimulate her clitoris with your hand.
Believe me, I've tried all that stuff. Yeah.
And you
the
might
G-spot
need to,
just doesn't respond to me. I don't know what
it is.
And
you might need to press harder. Some women need a little bit of a firmer kind of a touch.
I see, okay.
And you want to do, there's different ways you can do it. You could do like a come hither kind of motion.
Right.
You know, where you're doing that.
Uh-huh.
Or you can do like a windshield wiper kind of motion, or or you can do circles. You know, try it all.
I like to do a merengue.
Yeah. That could work too. And you know, you want to stay with it for a while. You want to stay with it. I mean, I would say, you know, 15-20 minutes would be good. And now look at, if she's saying, okay, that's just not working for me, I hate that, then you want to stop. But you might say, wait, just relax, take a breath, relax, stimulate her clitoris a little bit, see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
You might be surprised.
Really?
So yeah, don't give up yet.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that that's the dynamic of the communication anyway, is some women like the classic slam, bam, as hard as you can, and some like delicate as you can possibly get.
Right.
That's where the communication's got to be there anyway, because every person can be different.
Right.
So every person is different. Yeah.
Well, I mean, and one person's perfect. Okay, I got it. I got it down. Now you don't see that person anymore. Well, you know it now. Now you know the map. Try with the next person and like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the men will come in and they'll say, well, there's something wrong with her because
every other girl
I was ever with, and there's been many, has, you know, had multiple orgasms and they've loved what I've done. And, you know, I'm thinking, he's got a lot of fakers probably.
That's what I was thinking. Like, yeah.
Because I am amazed when I hear how many women fake orgasms still.
Yeah.
Really?
Women don't. Just stop it.
Yeah, just about to say that. Just, you know, let's just help them learn. You know, just stop. Bye, don't call me. Like, you know, let's just like, you know what? Let's just play Scrabble. You know, next time it's not working, just be like, Yeah, I just think Scrabble would be good right now. You know, or just, yeah. you know, like, let's not fake this shit. Let's just be honest.
Because what are you doing when you do that? One, you're never going to get the sex that you want because your partner is learning the wrong thing.
I think in a way, it kind of women devalue themselves sexually where they don't feel like they're worth the effort for a man to have to listen, be intimate, and have to explore. I think they could kind of go, oh, no, I'm embarrassed, or they kind of devalue that they're worth a lot of effort sexually.
Very true.
And I think that that's what a lot of women experience. They would just rather rush through it because it's not going great, that they're just like, oh, get it over with, because you know. And
or they know the guy's going to come, they don't want him to feel bad, or they don't want him to feel bad because they're not coming. Yeah, right. So it's
not you, it's me thing.
Do you feel like sometimes that the focus can be too much on the result?
Oh.
And it's not on each other, so it's about the experience as opposed to the people. And that mentally shifts, like you said, it mentally shifts the pleasure. And
absolutely.
Because it's not about, oh, I want to be here for you, and I want to satisfy you, and I want to be whatever that looks like. I just want to be with you, as opposed to, okay, shit, let's, okay, so we'll just pop this out and do this. Okay, flip it over, smack it, rub it upside down. Back in 10 minutes. You know what I mean? Like,
all right.
Just a different focus. Like, too much of it's trying to... No, I need to explore this. I got to do, as opposed to just like, you know, it being integrated and it being like about the person, you know?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I would say more often than not, I mean, we are an orgasm, genital, intercourse focused kind of a society. And when we're focusing on the home run, we're focusing on a goal. Yeah, we're losing so much. We really ideally want to be focusing on the pleasure. Giving and receiving pleasure. And when we focus on the giving and receiving pleasure, it becomes a whole other situation. It becomes so much more satisfying. And sometimes, you know, we may get to intercourse. Sometimes we may have orgasm. Sometimes one person may have an orgasm. Sometimes both. Sometimes none.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. But when you're focused, I mean, it's nice. We want to have those.
But it should
be. But when you focus on that, more often than not, it's not going to happen.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yeah, the man does
it
usually...
It's just, you know, all the things you mentioned, it has to do with pressure. You know, I think you have to do away with the pressure, you know. Not to think so much, but more just to get into the experience, you know, into the mood.
Exactly,
you know?
Right.
I think women are complicated, too. I think, you know, do you ever watch on Bravo Network, Patty Sternberg, Millionaire Match?
I've seen it.
Okay, I'm not totally down with everything she says, but she's got some nuggets of truth. And one thing she always tells the guy is that women get turned on between the ears, not the legs.
Very true.
And I think that...
Or the legs, too. But
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, cart before the horse type thing. It's like, generally speaking, women need the setting. They need to have the effort. They need to have intimacy, I think, on some level. Everybody's different, but I think generally to get a woman to feel super open and, like, relaxed and safe, because they say sexual feelings come from safety. I was seeing a guy for a while, and we would spend so much time in the evening just like hanging out and doing all the things that we love, that by the time it was like, you know what I mean? It was just like, it was just like boom, because everything that was non-sexual that we were bonding over for hours before was just so intense. And then sometimes he would want to just jump right to it, and I'd be like, wait a minute, we didn't watch this DVD. We didn't, I don't mean like porn, but I mean like music and stuff. You know what I mean? So there was all this stuff that was, if it wasn't in its place, then I would feel like, oh, I can't do this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the bottom line is, we want to feel connected, women, typically. I'm not going to say all women, but we'll say, yeah, most women need to feel connected. And what that really means is we want to be feeling, and by the way, this is also true for men. So I hate to bust that myth, but it's true.
Mm.
We all want to feel loved and desired.
Mm.
You know, when we're feeling desired, we're feeling loved, we're feeling connected. That's a really good thing. And the men want to feel that too, especially desired. You know, the biggest turn on for most men is a turned on woman. Why? Because then they feel desired. You know, they feel good about themselves. So we all really thrive on those kinds of things. It's rarely just about what's going on in between the legs. You know, that's one part of it. We want it to feel good. But yeah, it's also the getting out of our head and, like Sam said, really experiencing what's going on. Some of that is heart stuff, is that connection stuff, the feeling loved, the feeling special, the feeling desired. And you can feel that even with someone you just hooked up with. You know, feeling comfortable. And then, you know, the other part is just feeling the physical sensations. It's really great.
And I think you can honestly say there's some women that really are just into the sex. They don't need the romance thing. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm not saying all of them, obviously, but there are women like that. I'm sorry?
You got any numbers?
Sure. I got a whole friggin' book of them.
You'll have to get to it.
But yeah, you know. So, Mark, when did you first have sex? Was that pretty early in life?
No, I was a classic late bloomer.
Yeah.
I was 18.
Really?
Yeah. I graduated from high school at 17.
Uh-huh.
And I was the quintessential nerd.
Yeah.
I went out for football as a junior in high school. I was 5'7" and weighed 110 pounds.
Really?
And the coach said, I got cheerleaders bigger than you. And I didn't stop growing until I was like 21. And so I was this scrawny little kid.
Right.
And not when I met you.
Well, I'm awesome.
He was like hunky when I met him.
Well, that's the crazy thing is, especially I grew up in Florida, a beach town in Florida. I'm Irish. So mm-hmm. I've got the classic dynamic of red hair, fair skin. So instead of suntan, I sunstroke.
I see.
I go from pink to maroon. And so here I was, this redheaded kid, scrawny little kid. I had no chance with the chicks. Because all my friends were the Golden Surf God types.
I see.
And those, every woman was flocking to him. I couldn't even get the leftovers.
Yeah.
So
how depressing. I think
Mark.
We've all gone through that, though, you know?
But I made up for it.
Yeah.
You, Sam, you went through that?
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me? Yeah. I was like, I mean, if it was up to me, I would have had sex when I was 7 years old. I was playing doctor at 3 or 4 years old. I can still remember it.
You were an early bloomer.
Yeah, very early bloomer. You know, I mean, I remember driving on the bus, like, to school and stuff. Not a school bus, but...
You were driving the bus?
No, well, taking the bus, let's say. Yeah, driving. I was driving it, yeah, with my penis, right? But no, I remember, and I would fantasize about all these women there, you know, and they were, like, old enough to be my mother. But, so I was always aware of my sexuality, you know, and I don't know where the hell it came from, but it kind of stayed with me, you know, and... But as far as experiencing it as an adult, yeah, I had to wait till I was, 16, 17, something like that, you know. But still, you know, I think people are not really prepared for it, you know. It's not the same. It's not the same. You don't reach the pleasure that you do when you get older and you've had some experience.
So true.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, so...
Yeah, I mean, I had sex at 18, but I wanted it at 14.
Right. There you go.
And then it was the quintessential, I mean... stereotypical back of a van with some sled dog chick that a guy picked up at a bar that afternoon.
Yeah.
For you.
Yeah. I remember the back of the vans in the 70s, huh?
Oh, those were the days.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, not me in the 70s.
The Chevy vans with the waterbed
and
in the
back.
And
I was such an insecure kid. I mean, I'm basically, so where are you from? You know, as she's pulling my pants down. So, what? You go to college? How do you study?
What's your major?
I didn't have a clue. Like, bum, bum, bum. It was probably over in about 40 seconds. Okay, I'm a man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't exactly the pleaser.
Yeah.
So you were practically a virgin when we met.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
I've been around the world a bit.
Yeah.
No, well, but that's the mental component, and I think people go back that. Men and women both go back to those early days of the insecurities. Some people, what I have found is the most confident appearing people are sometimes the most insecure, and all you have to do, it's like a deck of cards. You pull one off, and the house of cards just falls down.
Really.
Versus the people that can basically take anything, and you, I don't like that. What? You don't like that? Freak out. Boom. Yeah. Done. Over.
Yeah. Insecurity, I mean, that's a thing that we all suffer with. We all are insecure about something. And when it comes to sex or our bodies, leaves a lot of room for insecurities. And our insecurities certainly get in the way of our sexual pleasure.
Right.
Because like you said, if we're thinking about performing, are we going to perform right? You know, we're feeling that kind of anxiety. We're in our head. We're not going to really be able to enjoy it. And if we're not enjoying it, we're really not going to be good lovers.
Right.
So, and our partner's not going to be enjoying it as much. And like the fake orgasm. So the woman's faking orgasm, she's not really enjoying it that much. It's not as enjoyable for the man.
Right.
It creates a dynamic.
I just can't even imagine doing that.
Me either.
Have you ever even thought about, should I just... It never crossed my mind...
Right.
I mean, and I'm an actress, but you're not getting, you know,
you want to do one now?
Yeah, book me. You got to get paid for that shit. It's a gig. It's like, look, if we're going to town and I'm not feeling anything, I'm going to put on a show.
I'm going to send you an invoice.
That's right.
I'm good. I want to hear a fake orgasm from you.
I wouldn't do one. Sorry.
No.
It's intimate.
Okay.
Yeah. I like it private. But
but you wouldn't do it. The only way you're going to do it is in front of a camera.
If I would. Yeah, possibly. I mean, my whole point is if I'm going to do an acting gig.
Yeah.
If you're asking me, we're hooking up and or we're supposed to be together and now I'm doing an acting gig.
Yeah.
I didn't know that's what I signed up for is my point. It wouldn't even occur to me. Yeah. Right. That, you know.
Yeah.
Now, what about fantasies and stuff? I know those are usually encouraged in couples and things like that, right? Now, you know, to me it's sort of like controversial because, yeah, it might help you be turned on and everything, but, you know, if your partner finds out you're thinking about someone else when you're having sex with them, that would create a problem.
Well, we don't need to tell our partner everything. Well, you know, we've talked about the connection piece, you know, the feeling connected, the feeling loved, the feeling desired. So I call that the heart part of it. And then there's the physical sensation, which is the body part. But let's not forget about the mind. Mm. When we talk about eroticism in the mind in a healthy way, not in the mind of the things we talked about before, oh, am I doing this right? And oh, the garbage is going to be taken out and all of that. But in the erotic mind, in our imagination, the fantasies that you're talking about, that is huge, and that is a really wonderful thing to incorporate alone.
Right.
I mean, when we're masturbating, but also when we're with a partner that we don't necessarily share with a partner, it can be a great bridge to heighten your sexual arousal.
Right.
So if you are having trouble getting aroused, and especially for women, to be able to, you know, to really focus in on that fantasy, why not? I mean, right. That's a great thing. You don't want to necessarily stay there, although certainly nothing wrong with that either. But to be able to really act out and talk about fantasies with your partner is a really fun thing.
Right.
And we all have sexual fantasies.
Right.
We
yeah. I mean,
do.
It's imagination, you know. Now, as far as masturbation and stuff, I mean, what kind of percentage would you say that of women that masturbate?
You know, there's so many different studies that come up with so many different figures. The last one that I'm aware of, you know, we're talking probably around 60%. Mm. That's 60% who say they do. And again, you know, who knows based on studies, but that sounds about right. In my mind, it should be 100%.
Right. Because men are like 95, isn't it, or something
like
that?
Well, it's like 100
for
on
men.
Seinfeld. Yeah. Brilliantly said. It's part of our lifestyle. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's
there you go.
Just,
it's part of it. You know, it's part of what you do every day.
I mean, for the first 3 or 4 years, most guys, that's all we have is solo experience.
Right.
And that's the new expression is spank bank. You know, you see spank a bank. Woman, you see a scene in a movie or something, it goes into the spank bank. So the next time you're there. Oh, yeah, I remember that one. Okay, good.
But women have a spank bang, too. And, you know, some people think, well, if I'm in a relationship, I shouldn't be masturbating
because
I should be getting all my sexual needs met through with my partner. But it's different. It's a totally different experience. It's a different thing. And people like to have sexual release for lots of different reasons.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's just it's a nice thing.
Right. Yeah. And it's, you know, a lot of people are embarrassed or ashamed of it, you know, but I think there's nothing wrong with sex for one, you know?
Exactly. I would agree with you. A lot of benefits.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
that's
your
cool.
own G-spot, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But what about, like, I know some, they say for some men and stuff, you know, experiment with like anal stimulation and things like that. You know, I don't know. I don't feel comfortable with that. I mean, is there a lot of people that are into that, or is there the fear of like, I'm going to seem gay, you know?
Good question. Anal sex is one of those things that most people are really curious and interested in, and most people feel uncomfortable with it. And not a coincidence that those two things go together really well. You know, there's something about taboo that makes it exciting. The anus by itself, we could say, has a lot of pleasurable nerve endings. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's very erotic because it is so taboo. Mm-hmm. So there are people who are interested in it. There are men who feel, I wouldn't want to go there. One, you know, it's just not macho. Right. You know, it means I'm gay if I enjoy having anything put in my anus. Yeah. But I'll tell you, if men can relax and then they have, a finger inserted or in their anus or around it, they usually like it. It feels good because of just... because of the nerve endings.
Give it a try,
pleasure.
Sam.
It's a pleasure.
I don't know. I don't like that area, you know? I mean, I don't know. It's one of these areas that I'm not that comfortable with. But, and also, you know, I mean, as far as like anal sex with a woman and stuff, it's also kind of like, I think you have to be like in a really close relationship comfortable with each other to be able to do something like that.
Well, not everybody feels that way, but I mean, look, I think if you're, my opinion is if you're going to have sex with anybody, you should be in a close relationship with them. That may make me sound a little bit prudish. I just think that you're going to have the best sex if it's with somebody who you feel comfortable with.
Right.
You know, and so, look, sex is risky. You know, there are things out there that we don't want to get. It's also risky emotionally, especially for women, but for men too. So I just think we need to make really good choices about who we choose to go to bed with. And if you're into hooking up one night with strangers, you know, it's your choice.
Yeah.
You know, you might just want to think about what it is you're really looking for.
Right.
I mean, if you're looking to get off, I mean, you can do that pretty well by yourself. So what is it you're really, really looking for? And so we have people who say that they are quote unquote sex addicts. You know, they just want to go hook up with as many people as they can. I mean, what are they really looking for? And, you know, to address some of those things, I think that's really, really important. So actually, I'm going to have Jack Morin, who is an expert in anal sex, wrote a book on it. And I'm going blank. He also wrote the Erotic Mind. I don't know. I'm just going blank right now. Anyways, we're going to be talking about that on the show soon.
An expert in anal sex.
He is an
Who's
expert.
Who's deemed him an expert?
There's an expert in everything these days.
You can be self-proclaimed expert. If you've been paid for one thing, you can say you're a professional. I mean, it's funny, though. That's hysterical.
He's written books, and he's great. And so, yeah, you wanna tune in on that show.
Is he straight?
Know when that's happening, what difference does it make?
Well, I mean, that does.
It does make a difference because it seems like, I mean, from the gay friends I have, they know a lot more about certain things than.
There are lots of gay men who say. There is nothing going near there.
Yeah. No, true. You're right. But I know a lot of gay guys that are just like. You know, you got a question about, you know, going downtown, I'll ask a gay guy what, you know what I mean? They'll tell you or, the back door, they know about what's going on down there too, like hardcore, you know,
right.
No pun intended.
but I
think it's a valid question. Mm-hmm. Not that you don't have any experience as a heterosexual, but it's funny to call yourself an expert.
No, heterosexual men can enjoy anal sex just as much as gay men. And there are heterosexual men that do, and there are gay men that don't. It's just one of those things. I think gay men probably feel more comfortable with it because... You know, it's expected. Yeah. And I think a lot of heterosexual men, if they were to relax, feel comfortable with somebody like you said, Sam, and recognize that, no, this is just another way of being sexual. It's very intimate, I think.
Right.
And, you know, it's about consenting adults who want to do something. And whatever they want to do, as long as it's not hurting anybody, as long as it's consensual, go for it. Have some fun. But with anal sex, there needs to be a lot of communication. There needs to be a lot of information. You don't want to just...
Right.
You know,
yeah, a lot of relaxation, too. Yeah. Okay, guys, well, our time is up.
Oh.
Dr. Lori Buckley, thank you so much
thank
for coming
you
in.
Oh,
pleasure.
It's just
always
fun.
A lot of
great
fun.
Being here. Thank you so much fun.
Of course. And Mark, thank you so much
pleasure.
For coming in.
Absolutely.
And we're looking forward to your show today.
Outstanding.
And everybody listen to Sexy Stuff every Friday at noon right here on LA Talk Radio. And that's it for today. Have a great weekend, Kira.
Have fun. And you're freaking living it up on the road trip.
Wherever, yeah.
Like, update me. Have fun. Have some sexy fun.
All right, everyone. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back here on Monday.
You have been listening to Sam and Kara in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 9 a.m. until 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, originating from the Los Angeles Talk Radio studios. If you have questions about the show or would like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please direct all correspondence to info@latalkradio.com. Sam and Kara in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.